Welcome to math class. We've talked about a lot of spiritual things so far, like obedience. I totally know all of them. Okay, obedience, we have trusting God, we have thankfulness, and there's another one in there I'm not recalling. But now we get to talk about stuff like, did all of this actually happen? Is it feasible to have all of these animals crammed into a tiny ark? So that is my assignment. Is the ark large enough? And also, I do want to say, I wanted to go into like a whole lot more apologetic stuff, but I have this problem that I go down rabbit holes. I want to understand like each individual thing super well before I try presenting it to you, and it did not do me very well. So we will stick to what the topic was originally assigned. So our first question is, well, how big was the ark? If someone could read Genesis chapter 6, verses 15 and 15.
15
and 16, yep.
And this is the fashion which thou shalt make it of. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, and the height of it 30 cubits. A window shalt thou make to the ark, and in a cubit thou shalt finish it above. And the door of the ark shalt thou set in the side thereof, with lower, second, and third stories shalt thou make it.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about cubits already. So if you don't know, cubit can either mean the distance from your elbow to about right here-ish, or it might actually mean all the way up to the top tip of your... So that's, first, that itself isn't consistent, right? And then if we were to sit and compare our forearms to each other, we're not all the same size either. So that's why we get this variance in terms of how big was the ark? We don't know. We just know that it was either 300 of this length for Noah or this length. And we don't know how tall Noah was or really any of that. So that's kind of why we're left in the dark there. But we do know that, hey, we can calculate it for me. We can calculate it for you. And we can get an estimate of how big that was. So the lower estimate from what I researched is about 450 feet long. That would make it 75 feet wide and 45 feet tall. On the larger end of the estimates, you end up with about 600 feet long, 100 feet wide, and 60 feet tall. So most estimates you're going to see are going to be in that range. The smaller range, so actually what I tried to do was I went on Google Maps. And I measured everything that I felt like we would have like a common reference point of like how large this actually is. So I was measuring like, you know, the distance from the back of the parking, back of the parking lot to the road and all that. And eventually what I came up with is Walmart. We all know how big, you know, Walmart is. There's larger Walmarts, smaller Walmarts. So in that range, so you can imagine at the upper end, and that's including all three decks. So if you take those decks, lay them side by side, you would end up on the larger scale, a very large Walmart with groceries and a garden center and tires, all of that. And probably a smaller Walmart would be the complete distance would be about half of that. So somewhere in that range. So to think about how big this was, have you ever searched for flowers? Like, okay, so it was Hannah's birthday, and I wanted to get her flowers. I wanted to get her the right, you know, yellow flowers. That was her favorite color flowers. Now, where does Andy look at Walmart to find flowers? The garden section, right? Like, that is, like, I need to get her flowers. I want to go to the garden section. And her birthday is also right after Black Friday. So you can imagine all the crowds at the store. So I'm like weeding my way through, and they had all the Christmas stuff out over all by the garden section. And there were no flowers that you could, you know, either just like the presentation of it too. It wasn't like, I didn't want to like bring dirt to her. There were no flowers. I was like, I could give that to her for her birthday, and she would be, like she'd love to grow one, but it wasn't what I was looking for. So I'm like, self, where else could this be? I can tell you it's not in the tire section that's in the opposite corner, and all the things, you know, that I could walk past to get there. It's probably not by the milk either, which is in the other corner, at least at my Walmart. And then I just had this strange feeling. What if I go to the fresh foods section? So I go over there, and what do you know? In the middle of the grocery section is actually where these flowers are. So I tell you this story to get you thinking about how big, you know, all the things you would walk by at Walmart and how big that is. And, you know, it's rather crowded, too, with a lot of people. That's why I'm telling you that story, because it is huge. There were a ton of people there. So then we end up with the question, okay, so that's how much space we're looking at that we're working with. So now how many animals are we going to have to fit onto the ark? For that, let's look at Genesis chapter 6, 19 through 22. Just whoever wants to grab that. Okay, and then chapter 7, verses 2 and 3. Okay, so between these two passages, we have two of every unclean, a male and a female, and then the seven situations. Is it seven of them? Is it seven pairs? I think some translations actually say seven sevens. The answer is Hebrew is kind of up in the air sometimes. We don't know. It's one of those. We just don't know, and that's why the translations kind of pick their favorites on what they think it is. But the really interesting thing in these two verses is this word kinds. So what do you think it means when it's saying kinds? Two of each kind.
Two monkeys? Like
a classification. Each species. Okay, we're getting science words here. Species. So I did have my sister-in-law, who's like a biology major. She went to Freed, so she was taught creation science, but she also took like evolutionary courses because that's how they have to communicate in the scientific world, unfortunately. Okay, so yeah, let's look at Genesis 1, because this is really the first time that we see this word kind used. So Genesis chapter 1, verses 24 and 25, and I'll go ahead and read that. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kinds." And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. It's very easy to think about dogs, right? There's the dog kind. A dog is always going to be a dog, but a dog might be a Labrador, it might be a poodle, but it also might be a Labradoodle, a combination of both. And this is where the species word becomes interesting, because that's actually remains true. That, okay, you have a dog kind, that's intuitive. And it's easy to understand because, and we can see that variation because we've done it. We wanted to have dogs that were good at, getting in cold water and fetching things. That's why poodles are cut the way they are. You have little terriers that were designed to go down into holes. Humans have bred them and used the variation within that kind to our purposes. So what we call this idea is microevolution. I used a scary word there, but so microevolution is the idea that there is this variance within what we would call a kind. So we have dogs, but dogs can be poodles, or they can be Labradors. So microevolution is in contrast to macroevolution. And macroevolution is really what you think about when you hear evolution. Macroevolution claims that small, gradual variations caused by natural process, refined by the need for survival, is sufficient explanation for the diverse life we see today. So macroevolution is the idea, the source of diversity of all life, and all life comes from a common biological ancestry. This idea is in contradiction to what we just read in Genesis 1, that each one came from its own kind and multiplied from its own kind. Macroevolution would say, no, it was all one and then split up. So are we good on that different terms? There's differences there. I want to make sure everybody, okay, I'm seeing enough enough nods, because I know sometimes I explain things with big words, and I want to make sure people, okay. So unfortunately, most of scientific knowledge, the term species, families, domains, and kingdoms, those terms actually refer to different branches of macroevolution and how they think about it in terms of, okay, this is, according to their theory, related to this. So those terms don't always work. the dog one usually works because all wolves and poodles and Labradors, they're all the same species. But as I was researching this, tigers and lions are considered different species according to their system, but we also have ligers, which are a combination of a lion and a tiger. So the word species doesn't really always fit. Sometimes it is the right one, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's family. We don't know. And the reason we don't know is nobody's really sat down and researched this. There's some movements in creation science to actually begin categorizing all of life based on their kinds. So it's taking the biblical idea, okay, everything has its own kind. Let's group, all the dogs together. How far back does that go? And you could also do giraffes, you could do horses, are horses, donkeys, and zebras all the same kind, or is there a split somewhere? So they're trying to start that, but right now they haven't gotten very far. Interestingly, my sister-in-law actually wants to do her doctoral work on that and actually figure out, take one marine animal and figure out all of its, kind, where are those lines, where are they not. So, really long story short, what I'm trying to say there is, I think abstractly, we get the idea of a kind, right? Like a monkey, a horse, a dog, a cat. Like abstractly, that makes sense. But if I, if anybody was really to sit down and actually talk to, and answer really technical questions about this, creation science is not ready to answer all of those questions yet. It's not that they cannot be answered, it's just it takes a lot of manpower to do that. And back to the question of how many animals. And I think you can see how this relates, because it's not really species. It's actually a lot fewer than the number of species. I'm actually working from an Apologetics Press article for this, citing my sources. And they, the calculation that they used came up with about 21,000 species would be, have to be on the ark. And they decided to use the generous estimate. That is to say, you know, let's just go ahead and, for the sake of argument, include tigers and lions, even though we're pretty sure we would only need one or the other. So they include, you know, try to include as many as they possibly can for the sake of argument. But they did not include fish. Fish do not have to be saved from a flood, would have thought. So then multiplying this by two, then including clean animals, we can get a number around 50,000. So we started at 21,000 species, and then doubled that, and then added clean animals. Really rough math, you end up with about 50,000 there. So then let's think about the idea that we got to fit all of these animals, 50,000 animals into Walmart, okay? So that's kind of a difficult mental picture. So one way to break it down is to think about a boxcar. How many animals can you fit into a boxcar? Well, you have to know what the size of a boxcar, or the size of animal. Animals are all different sizes. So to get around that, their suggestion is to think about it in terms of a sheep. You know, a lot of animals are a lot larger than a sheep. A lot of animals are a lot smaller than a sheep. So if we think about the average animal size is about a sheep. And that's also a good working number because we see a lot of sheep in large groups. So according to their source, a single boxcar, so if you think about a train, you have boxcars going down, how many sheep can you put into a large train? According to their calculations, you could fill up a boxcar with about 240 sheep. Another source that I looked at suggested that that would be 120 on each level. So you would have a lower level, you could have 120 sheep, and an upper level, 120 sheep. And then you would end up with needing about, with those numbers, about 210 boxcars for inside of Walmart. Now, can we fit 210 boxcars into Walmart? Yeah, like in a, actually according to their calculations here, it would take about a third. So then you have two thirds for food or whatever else you need. And that's actually with the estimate of the smallest size ark compared to the most animals you could possibly need to bring along. And I think I already mentioned that the 50,000 number is extremely generous. I mean, like, you know how many different species of monkeys there are? You know, and just the tiger and lion example, just cutting that in half, right? And say, well, let's say only half of species, you end up with like 25,000, and you're only down to like one-fifth the size of Walmart, you know? So, for me, this is something that we need to consider because some things Genesis does not explain. It does not explain, you know, the sanitation. It does not explain, well, it does say, you know, to bring along the food. But this is something that it does make a claim on, that it says there was this ark, this size, that we can physically figure out now and measure, and we can go back and figure out, is that reasonable to say, could this many animals fit on this size of boat? And I think the answer is yes. Once you actually sit down and crunch the numbers, it actually works out. I understand that it's something that intuitively you just think about like, oh wow, two of every animal on Earth? Like that's gonna be a lot. But once you actually break it down into numbers, the math really does work out. Personally, what bothers me more is the sanitation, as Patrick mentioned. It's one of the things I don't understand. I was actually talking to James about it, and he referred me to a book that, you know, where a guy actually sits down and breaks all of this down, and say, what about each little thing? How feasible is it? How could it be done? I don't know, sanitation still bothers me, though. But this goes back to, well, what I was going to say earlier is, at some point you kind of have to have that that trust in God, that God provided what they needed, perhaps. And the thing is, he doesn't explain. Now, if he explained it and he felt that it was important to include, like the size of the ark is, you know, we could go and test it and say, okay, is this reasonable? Is this not reasonable? But a lot of other things just aren't explained. So I think, go ahead.
Just on that point, we just have to, to your point, we have to just keep open the possibility God just did it.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, just like the children in the wilderness, the manna showed up every morning, right? I mean, he just.
Right. Yeah, I will say I have difficulty balancing, you know, what is the point of, we need to make sure that what God is telling us is reasonable. And I was thinking about this a little bit, like, because at some point you do have to say, let's look at what the Bible is saying and say, is this reasonable to believe? But at the same time, if we are, you know, putting every little thing that it says under like scientific testing and it's really not, at that point, it's possible to reach a point that our faith is not in God, but rather in science. I think it is best, well, I'm pretty firm on, that it is best for our faith to be in the Bible, not in science. But it is also good, I think when it's, and this is where I've landed at after studying for this, is if it's something that the Bible explicitly states, this is how it happened, you know, let's look at that. Let's make sure that's, you know, good. But if it just says, this all happened and God took care of it, that's kind of what we have to accept. Does that make sense?
I mean, there's nothing about this event that's natural.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All laid that boat somehow, right?
Right.
I mean, for him to find that wood, for him to cut it all right, for it all to fit together, for it not to leak, for it to go that long, to carry that kind of weight. I mean, just everything about the situation, nothing's natural.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be careful not to try to put God underneath his own laws that he created. And he's the creator of the laws of if an animal has to eat or not, you know, so we can't put him in his own box. So.
Right. Okay, let's see. Okay, then another, does anybody else have any other comments or questions they wanted to ask?
I have a question. Is it true that the ocean-going vessels of today are approximately on that same ratio as far as length and width is concerned?
The chart that I saw, this is not something I researched specifically, but what I did see was that a lot of our larger modern ships are quite a bit larger than what the Ark would have been.
And what I'm saying is the ratio as far as length and width.
I do not know the answer to that question.
From
okay, I got two people over here that are raising their hands. Sounds good.
Sailing ship.
And I think a lot of them were those ships, I think a lot of them were tankers too.
Yeah.
So they carried a vast amount of load, center of gravity.
What you want was the load that would be able to carry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anybody else have anything else before we move on? Awesome. So what about dinosaurs? So we do run into a size problem, perhaps, with dinosaurs. You know, we can't really go back and, well, I guess we have their bones. We can go back and measure their bones. So the assignment briefly touched on this. Basically, the answer is, who said they were full grown? You know, especially for even for giraffes or something, you can, why bring a huge one? We can just bring a small little one and it work. It'll do the job just fine. They also suggest eggs, and this is, I didn't give my speculation warning. What's in the Bible, we can know for sure. But there's also a large body of speculation around it. It doesn't mean that, when we enter something that's speculation, is it untrue? Like, it's just stuff we don't know the answer to. Maybe it was, they were young. Personally, their theory of just carrying eggs on board doesn't quite make sense to me because it says that the animals came to Noah, like not that Noah went and gathered them. So that doesn't make sense to me, but it's something like speculation, realm of opinions. I'm okay if you disagree with me on that. But then we might ask, if the dinosaurs didn't die in the flood, where did the dinosaurs go? And for this, I actually want to consider, have any of you seen Is Genesis History? Okay, I got one. So if you have not seen it, it's really good. I was going to bring up more of its material, but the issue is I did not have access to it while I was preparing for this. So I'm going to make the recommendation. it's really good. It had a lot of apologetics I hadn't heard before, and it's worthwhile. Is it okay if I ignore the bell? Okay, I'm going to ignore the bell. So where did the dinosaurs go? So this is something that came up in that documentary. And if we look at Genesis chapter 6, verses 5 through 8, again, I'll read that real quick. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the earth, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. Now, at least for me, and it's usually for most people, this is the passage I go to when I'm like, why did God destroy the earth? It's because of the wickedness of man. But Genesis is old enough that has this interesting property that its literature style is to repeat itself and to say the same thing again in different words. So if we actually skip down to verse 11, we see one of these repeating patterns and uses slightly different words that I want us to consider. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. And this is something I really hadn't considered until I had seen Is Genesis History, that a lot of the fossil record is kind of terrifying and very violent. You can think of a saber-toothed tiger. It's like a tiger, but with like giant teeth that are designed to kill things. You have a lot, some of the dinosaurs, very like large claws, large teeth. They're designed to bite and kill each other. Also, speculation warning. This is all in the realm of speculation. But what it does say, though, is we know that those animals obviously do not exist today. It's very possible that the punishment applied not only to man but all flesh, because all flesh had become corrupted. All flesh was violent. So again, speculation warning, but that is what the Bible says. It's something I hadn't interpreted that way until I watched that. So with that in mind, it's possible that the most violent of the dinosaurs did not make it on the ark, because they might have another within their same kind that was not. So you can think like saber-toothed tiger didn't make it, but a tiger did. Perhaps. But then you still have the problem that because it was every kind, some of the dinosaurs would have been on board. We can look and see dinosaur records. There were some dinosaurs that, they're like herbivores. They weren't in the same category. So what happened to them? And speculation warning. If we look at Genesis 5, 9 through 17. So in this genealogy, if we look at it, let's look at how many years old they lived. So we see Adam lived to be 930, Seth 912, Mahalalel 840, you have Methuselah at 969. So these people live in their 800s, 900s, really old. Now let's consider chapter 11, which is the first genealogy after the flood. It's going to be starting at verse 12. We have Eber at 403 years old. 403, 430, 209, 200, 119. You see what's happening here? After the flood, their lifespans are dropping very quickly. So this suggests to me, again, speculation warning. I feel like I need to say that because I want you to understand that there is what the Bible says, and that's what's true. And then there's what we're trying to figure out, and this is what pieces we're trying to fit together. These pieces. So the lifespans drop very quickly and only continues. Eventually it gets down to 50 or 60, and then, in modern times it works its way back up. And there's also evidence for things like palm trees in Antarctica, and I really wanted to get into a lot more of that with, different evidences of that the whole world was very different than what it is today. So that suggests a very abundant earth before the flood. And then it changed, and perhaps that the larger animals like the dinosaurs could not be supported by the earth after the flood. So again, that speculation, it's interesting to consider. That's the material that I have prepared. Do you have any other questions, comments? Yeah. Okay, thank you all for listening. I hope that was helpful. Thank you.